Okay, so this talk is regarding the topic of life-affirming ministry, and I don't want to refer to the deaf side of it, but occasionally we might have to use those words. But I will use a few statistics just to situate us in the present time and in the present condition. But today, the Holy Spirit really impressed upon me that this is a universal topic. I should not say it's planet-wide. I won't say universe. Universe in the sense that it affects every country. That just especially struck me today. And so I looked up some statistics about the birth rates in the countries that we represent. So the topic is life-affirming activities that we can engage in. Our purpose with this group is spiritual warfare. So we sent out the prayer points that affect the spiritual warfare can affect this life-giving ministry in the what are commonly referred to as the spheres of influence that would include the ones that I will be addressing specifically today will be the mostly the education and the outreach to the people in need rather than some of the more technical areas like law or business, but they are included as well. We'll touch on the church as well. So I'll be talking specifically about the pregnancy center movement. Then I will talk a little bit about educational resources and media. And I will not be talking specifically about legal or medical or business, but those are also included. So in the prayer points, if we wish to pray, we can address those as well, because the spiritual warfare is the enemy that is basically deaf. It's just, there's no, we can say that it's pride, it's selfishness, it's ego. It's actually basically deaf, because life comes directly from God. Human life comes directly from God. And the whole life-affirming aspect is based on the biblical premise that humanity is made in God's image. And that includes the physical body as well as the spirit. Sometimes we say, well, the spirit is made in God's image. Well, the soul, which is the emotions and the intellect and the heart that bridges the gap between the physical and the spirit. And then we know that we're created in God's mind. According to Psalm 139, he thinks about us before we're even created. We're created with a purpose. So we're created in the sense of God making us as the image of God making at the man out of clay and then breathing the spirit into him. We're made physically, we're manifested, but we're also generated in the sense that we have the spirit that comes directly from God, and that is love. And it's the agape love. We say God is love in the prologue of John's gospel. And even in the first word, I read yesterday that the first word in Genesis, I believe it's berit, which means the word. So Jesus is incarnate in the scriptures. He's manifested. Of course, he was present from the moment of the creation billions of years ago before humanity was created. But God created a perfect environment for humanity before according to the Genesis accounts, before humanity was even formed, God had already created everything that we need. And he partnered with us to create human life. And he especially entrusted that to the woman and created the woman to have the genetic components and the hormones to be especially attuned to the delicacy and the sensitivity of human life. And the woman's body is created with all of the cells that will ever be manifested as children. So that is part of the woman's makeup. God provided that instinctively, but also cognitively. So the man's makeup is a little bit different. But ironically, the woman is rushing up to present time, the woman is fertile only a few days each month and only for a portion of her life. Whereas the man, once he reaches his physical puberty, he's theoretically fertile every single day of his life. And yet it's the woman that has the responsibility there. So I will talk about the influence of men a little bit later in this talk, because men have been brought into the picture only very recently. Men had been kind of left out of the picture, and that's because the enemy, the forces of death, deliberately kept men out of the picture. And the life affirming movement, sometimes called the pro-life movement, but some people don't like that word, so the new buzzword is life affirming. It has been a reactive movement because the enemy has been aggressively bringing death. So we've mostly responded. We can hardly catch our breath as we come up with solutions when the enemy is coming up with something new. So we're becoming more and more proactive. Also, the ministry has been primarily a ministry of women. It just happened that way, that and it urgently needs male leadership, and that also is changing as we bring men more into the picture. So I want to be hopeful and optimistic, but I'll give a few statistics. I'll use the United States as a barometer. I did speak with a woman named Jennifer Gurry, who handles 50, she has at least 35 pregnancy centers in Australia. Most of them are in the Sydney area. She would like to have a few more. She's a really brilliant woman to talk to. She gets right to the point, just very, very energetic. She's been doing these pregnancy centers. I think she's quite youthful looking, but I think she's been doing this for about 35 years, I think she said. Anyway, she was, Mary gave me some information I shared with her that she was just thrilled to receive it, because it was information that's hard to get that she had been looking for, and Mary obtained it from one of her groups. So that was just a beautiful example of how providential God is, that when we have the need, it's supplied almost instantly. And that's one of the beauteous things about working with the pregnancy care network, because they are actually nurturing human life as it's being formed in the woman's body. And that's probably the most sacred and fun time to be involved in someone's life, even if they are in some kind of turmoil. So the pregnancy center movement was started in 1967 in the United States by a couple. A married couple and a religious sister, Sister Paula Van de Geer, and then Peggy Hartshorne and her husband, who founded what became the Heartbeat umbrella organization, which oversees it. Well, it doesn't monitor or police, but it provides training for pregnancy centers. So there are 3,000 pregnancy centers worldwide, and 2,700 of them are in the United States. And the pregnancy center in Australia called Diamond w Women, that is, they're an affiliate of Heartbeat. So they have their own separate umbrella organization. And then they also connect with the US-based organization, and they provide online training. They'll be having a training at the end of April or the beginning of May, where they have at least 50 presentations on various aspects of running a pregnancy center. So the pregnancy centers were originally designed as a phone call, what we call a hotline, where if a person found herself in what are now called an unintended pregnancy. The young people don't even like that word. They just want to say pregnancy, because sometimes they do intend to the pregnancy, even if they have no, if they have not thought through their situation, that what to do once they have the baby. Sometimes they just want to have the child. So 80% of the people who go to use the services of pregnancy centers do intend to give birth. They do want to have the child. They usually use the pregnancy centers because they don't have adequate resources in their homes, or they're young, or they simply need confirmation of pregnancy so that they can obtain medical services. So once they come to the pregnancy center, they can receive counseling, private counseling. And we use the little slogan, we meet them where we are, where they are at. It years ago, the pregnancy centers were what we call faith-based. They were Christian, and it was just standard that we would greet them and introduce them to the scriptures in the Bible. Well, over time, that became less and less a popular way to work with the woman. So now we first try to build a little bit of a relationship with her before we introduce that to her, because this generation of young people might not have had any Christian education or any biblical knowledge. So we don't want to impose ideas upon her that she's not ready for, or make her feel judged in any way. We also use the word being non-judgmental, which means just being open-minded. So the people who need to be in the position of being mentors or counselors, they should have some training, but often they don't, and often they're not really equipped to hear the great diversity of problems that people can come in with, and they might not be equipped to encounter nationalities or levels of poverty or youth that they've never experienced before. So it does require training, and there is a high turnover in the pregnancy centers because it's a stressful job, and often the needs can in the pregnancy center can be so extreme that the people, they might want to volunteer just maybe a few hours a week, but they find they're needing to come in every day, and sometimes that can become overwhelming. And it's just a very dynamic time of life. Usually, the people who work in the pregnancy centers as counselors, in the past, they were mostly married Christian women who already had families, and usually their children were older. The women might be in their 40s or 50s. Now the women are younger, and a lot of them are, some are not married, some have no children. So the dynamic and the people group that show up, it's always changing, and it's reflective of each area. Like in Australia, there would be a component of people who come who are probably Aboriginal or Indigenous people that might have poverty level. In the United States, it would be a different group. In the United States, we have a lot of Spanish immigrants, and those are making up the bulk of who comes to the pregnancy centers. So they come to the centers because maybe they've become homeless because they're pregnant. Maybe they're in a situation of violence. Maybe their parents said, if they're teenagers, maybe they feel like they can't be at home. Usually the parents do come around, but usually they're in some kind of a crisis. And we never addressed their psychological conditions. We never tried to be invasive personally to them. We wanted to be respectful, and we simply just didn't know about psychology, but now we do. And now we realize that when a young woman is finding out that she's pregnant and she's not prepared, she's unmarried, if the man wants, will cooperate with her, 70 or 80% of the time, she will definitely have the baby, even if he does, even if they're not married. Usually they're not married. So the statistics are in the United States, of unintended, 60% of pregnancies in the United States are what are called unintended. Of those, if there's no partner, 30% of those will end in abortion. And of those that are due to some kind of coercion, the girl did not want a sexual relationship, but for one reason or another, she got duped into it. Maybe if she's an immigrant and she needed a place to stay, could be myriad reasons. But of those, 25% are coerced or sexually exploitive or acts of violence perpetrated against her, and or it could be sex trafficking. It could be young kids in schools, 12, 13-year-olds in schools who somehow got exploited by, it could be a teacher, it could be almost anybody. In the United States, in California, a 12-year-old can show up and get an abortion, and her mother would never even know that she's been sex trafficked. The schools have been given that. So that's an extreme situation. I don't mean to be overly scary. Regarding marriage in the United States, 50% of marriages end in divorce, of second marriages, 70%. But among the young people, they're not even going for marriage. Something like 80% of babies born in the United States are now born to mothers alone. The man, they're not legally married. The man is not. So that means we still have legal contracts in the United States where for the child to have the father's name and for him to have the benefit in health insurance benefits, that the couple needs to be married. But if 80% of these the women are not married, then they don't have any security or future. It's not a good situation at all. And this refers to all income levels. Now, this is a recent development. It doesn't mean that 80% of children have no fathers in the home. The statistic. It comes from a study done by the Mormon Church, the Latter-day Saint Church. They're very much focused on doing statistical research. So we're very grateful that some of the statistics come from faith-based organizations and not simply the Guttmacher Institute that tracks the deaths, the pregnancies that end in the destruction of the fetus. So the rates of abortion was going down until the advent of the abortion pill, and now, unfortunately, upwards of maybe 63 to 65% of abortions are performed by ingesting the pill. So there is legislation trying to address that, but that will be not only a US problem, but an international problem. Unfortunately, the pill was developed in France, and then the United States brought it to a very sophisticated level of development. And then from there, like a ripple in a dirty pond, it just sp spread all over. So in the United States, the Australia is it has a better rate of marriage. I think it's 40% of divorce, and more children are raised in homes with two parents, and the abortion rate is about it's about 10% lower than in the United States. So I think that's good, but Jennifer Gurry is she said that Australia just needs a lot of help. She said that in Australia, major organizations. Oh, in the United States, abortion is pretty much funded by public services agencies that are funded by the government. So the United States government is paying for most of the abortions. People can get private abortions at hospitals. But now that the pill is being used, the whole dynamic and the whole structure of obtaining abortion is changing. So that's in a state of flux. So I don't know how, if I didn't investigate how abortions are paid for in Australia, but in the UK, I was pretty staggered to discover that they not only the I wasn't able to get an exact statistic on abortion in the UK, but it seems to be pretty high. It had been low for a while, but with the advent of the pill, it went up again. And it is legal in, I've just talked about England. It's legal in Ireland now too. I didn't look too closely at Wales, but it's similar. But in England at least, it's a pretty seems to be a pretty high abortion rate, and it's paid for. At least 70% of the abortions are paid for by the government, which is pretty upsetting to me. So, of the countries that are represented by our particular group, I just took a quick peek at Indonesia. Abortion is not legal in Indonesia unless it can be shown that it's for the mother's health. And yet, they have a very high abortion rate in Indonesia. So, I didn't investigate too far to find out what the source of those abortions are. The Netherlands has a low rate, so I didn't investigate that too closely. I don't think we presently have somebody in the Netherlands with our team that was more, in the past, but I was happy to see they have a much lower abortion rate, at least on the statistic that I found. Israel is problematic because it has a higher abortion rate than it should, but it's also not a religious nation, it seems. And also, the military conscription seems to be a source of aggravated sexual assault against women that necessitates it almost forces them into abortion because they see it as almost a necessity, which is very sad when we consider that our faith was literally based on the end of child sacrifice. When, we all know that biblical picture of Abraham taking his son and with his arm raised, just about to slay him with a knife when the angel stayed his hand. So that, that picture is kind of emblazoned in our minds from our Sunday school days. So the Jewish faith was based on the ending of child sacrifice. And then we see through the Hebrew scriptures that whenever the Israelites strayed, the Hebrews or the Israel later the Israelite people strayed, God always reprimanded them if it was child sacrifice. Well, more than reprimand, he punished them vigorously if they engaged in child sacrifice. So that, that's kind of the dividing line between the moral development. And then it's said that the Christian faith flourished in the Roman Empire because the Christians rescued the Jewish people. The early Christians that were Jewish rescued the Roman, the pagan, the Roman infants that were left out if they were unwanted, especially the females, if they were left out to die, then the early Christians took them in. And so I've been told that that's what caused the Christian religion to flourish because it was that agape love of seeing the child and the mother as precious. So in terms of the fall in the Garden of Eden, it seems that it seems to have ushered in the whole concept of murder and assault of a stronger against a weaker. So the man, instead of being the husband and the protector and the father, could be provoked to aggression. And so we seem to be living out those pagan influences. And then those pagan deities that were accredited with demanding child sacrifice, some of them were seen as the so-called goddesses, but they weren't really, they were demons. The demons don't really have gender, but they might assume a gender of a goddess. And it seems that the child sacrifice, as we learned in our talk today from Shell, that he said that the child sacrifice was for the purpose of prosperity. That seems to be the buzzword that people use when they show up at a pregnancy center and say they can't keep the child for financial reasons. When in the economy of God, we used to say that children are our wealth, children are our riches, children are our prosperity. So it's ironic, but we do say that the devil comes to steal, kill, and destroy. So steal is to, we handed over power to the devil in the garden, according to the Genesis story, for false knowledge. And then kill is the middle part, and that's the and also the humiliation of the woman going for an abortion. She's so exposed. It's been compared to, during this season of the year, when we're during this time of year, when we're thinking about the death of Christ, of Jesus, we're getting ready for that annual representation and memory of that. It's been the experience of Christ has been compared to when Isaac was supposed, when Abram was going to slaughter his son, and his son had carried the wood for the sacrifice that he would be laid out on, and that's a precursor, a shadow of what Jesus actually did with his Calvary walk, where he had to carry the wood on his back and then was laid out on it as a sacrifice for us, for all of us. That is so deep and tender, and this is the time of year when we dwell on that. And a preacher that I listen to a lot said that the woman going for an abortion is almost in that same kind of humiliated situation, but God will take that away from her. The woman, it almost came to be seen as almost like a chattel. In the United States, the women didn't even have the vote until not that long ago, sometime maybe around 1910, something like that. So before that, legally, the woman was a non-person. A person in the law is someone who has full legal rights. So we live in that kind of thinking and environment that we just take it for granted. But sometimes in our prayer, when we go deep into prayer, God will bring us to a deep level of what he thinks about these things. And that can be so unsettling. We can't live in that rawness for long, but he'll allow us that. But in any case, getting back to the pregnancy centers, it can be a very joyful time. And then the pregnancy centers often will try to connect with the local community, especially the small churches, and engage them to maybe have their young people come into the churches, into the pregnancy centers, and have diaper drives, collect diapers or baby clothes. And those are fun things to do, especially for, Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or high school students. They can do that. And it's also a way to get them used to the fact that this little baby that is born naked and, just a few inches long will require massive amounts of diapers and specialized food and specialized equipment. So when they begin to see that reality, also the pregnancy centers, they're very good at gathering those kinds of equipment and supplies. They're a big problem that most of the people need is housing. So that's always a challenge. And then when we come to the, moral rehabilitation or counseling, that's a little bit trickier, but there are ample resources for parenting courses that are offered online. They're really quite wonderful, and they're adapted for different cultures, where they can come to the pregnancy center and receive parenting classes. They can watch a video with the counselor, or they can have a class. And we have adapted the counseling sessions for different immigrant groups. I had a several many years ago, I taught parenting classes in a center where everyone who came was Chinese. And so I had an interpreter, and the Chinese people that come from communist countries, the moms were wonderful, but they'd never been told about Jesus or how God thinks about motherhood. And they were so delighted to hear the message that they just naturally wanted to become Christian because of the message. They just couldn't believe they were in a country that really treasured them for being mothers. So that was a delightful experience. I never anticipated that would happen in the area where I was working. It's quite a large Chinese immigrant population. Most of them were married, but most of them were here without their husbands because the husbands didn't have weren't given visas. So The husbands eventually came, but for them that was a big stigma to have no husband with them. So each culture is different, and that was something that was very rewarding for me because they're so respectful of their teachers. And the parenting classes that we taught were very simple, just how to get the baby to sleep at night, just different things that in their culture they do things differently, and they really wanted to learn. They didn't want to forsake their values, but they wanted to learn how things were done here. So in the pregnancy centers, it's very gratifying when the woman walks in and wants the baby. The people who do the counseling in the centers where they are more likely to have very high abortion rates, especially in neighborhoods where abortions are much more prevalent in the minority neighborhoods in an area where most of the clients, excuse me, the moms are often referred to as clients when they're from we call Black or African American. They're so much pressured to have abortion that when they come in, they will they're they have great English language skills, but they have been not been given the educational that they live kind of isolated, and they haven't had the mainstream educational values, so they don't realize that, and they don't have as many opportunities for marriage or the man in the home. So up to 80% of them will choose abortion, but they can come back for post-abortion counseling, and a lot of them are truly biblically based, so that's good too. So the conversion process can take a while, but it's very hard on the counselors in those centers because it's very discouraging to know that the woman that you're talking to is going to have an abortion. It's very, very disturbing. So I and others wanted to get to the people before they showed up pregnant. We wanted to get to them much younger. So in the past 10 years, there's been a very aggressive movement to develop really wonderful educational programs that explain about biology. I'd mentioned that we never really talked about sexuality in the pregnancy centers. It's not a topic that women are comfortable with. Men are fine. They like talking about the plumbing, as we say. They're biological and they're scientific and they think the body's fascinating. But we the women we were much more focused on the mom, the baby, and relationships and not on the physical aspects. But we found that we did need to talk to the woman about fertility cycles and how she got pregnant, when she can get pregnant, and if she is going to go to an abortion center, what the procedures are. We're not, of course, recommending that at all, but we call it options counseling. But that was for donors. They didn't understand that. Most donors, especially organizations that are headed by men, they don't really know what goes on in a pregnancy center, so there could be misunderstandings. And these were all opportunities for what we call spiritual warfare. In the United States, there's a lot of persecution in the government against pregnancy centers. They're always trying to shut them down. And a pregnancy center should not be controversial. It should not be controversial to give a woman some diapers and some baby clothes and help her find a home and a job and help her, restore her relationship or help her boyfriend find a job. Those are just humanitarian values based on the Beatitudes. But the government seems to think that that's, we're encroaching on their territory because they're so abortion minded. So that's a con it, in the United States, we have 50 states, each with its own set of laws, and only 10 or maybe 12 of them forbid abortion, but the girl can get an abortion pill through the mail. But I live in California, so it's a pro-abortion state, but that is changing since the last election. The people are having their say much more. And especially as the immigrant population becomes assimilated, their second and third generations are getting educated and getting into the professions where they can advocate for their own people. So the education now is expanding to include men, and I'm really thrilled about that because I raised sons. I have nephews. They're in the medical field. I just really have a heart for educating the men because the woman, the baby is growing in her body. She's engaged. She has no choice. Whereas the male, unfortunately, the culture left the male out of the picture right from the get-go, right from when the birth control pill was first invented. The woman was the target to take this chemical into her body, but the male was the beneficiary. It was the male who thought, oh, well, now I have this free access to sex. But over 50 or 60 or 70 years, that's really eroded the masculine qualities that God gave Adam in the garden when God said, you are the husband. Even before, according to the second story of Genesis, the woman was created from the man's body. So Adam had named the man, he had named all of the animals, he'd given everything a name and a purpose. And that's how we see fathers. Legally, it's the father that gives the child the purpose and the identity. And it kind of boils down to identity. That's the man's role. And to be the protector, the provider, and to want to have children, it makes men very, very proud to say, I've created all of these children. How many men have said, he just so proudly, I have eight children. And I just think, my gosh, the woman is the one who has physically given birth to these children and nursed them and raised them. And yet the man can say, bravo. And I mean, it's wonderful. We want to bring that back. But that erosion of the male, the biological inbred male drive to be the protector has been eroded to the point that now more women are going to getting higher education, more women are going to college, more women are doing things that men used to do. And so it, unfortunately, even though we saw it coming, unfortunately, human nature being as it is, we don't seem to really address something until it's an actual crisis. So we're now at the point where I call it the fatherhood initiative, where we want to bring men back into the home. And ironically, men of this generation, men who are under 50, they're very much involved in childcare. I see it with my own son and nephews that they can cook dinner. They don't mind changing a diaper. I don't think my husband ever changed a diaper, whereas my son, his wife can work and have her career, and he can take care of the children and my nephews as well. So that's just commonplace for that generation. And also, we know much more about child development than we ever did. So I love to be able to explain to children that when a 2-year-old has a tantrum and says no, rejoice because it just shows that he's confident enough and secure enough to be able to do that. And so we're also learning about the way different cultures handle their emotions. And so there's just the United States is so culturally diverse that it's really necessary to learn those things. And then also the aspects of trauma and another disability that seems to be more common lately in the past 20 years in the United States is autism, which can cause the person not to have full ability to make decisions for themselves. I don't want to oversimplify a complicated situation, but we in the past we weren't sensitive to those things, and now there's a whole body of knowledge where that's becoming available. So God has given us resources in all spheres. And also now many women go to law school. In the past, women never went to law school. And now as many women go to law school and medical school, there are more women who are obstetricians and gynecologists than men and in the medical profession. So there are We want to bring men back, of course, but we also want to see that the women are recognized as being, full cognitive, rational human beings. And getting back to the pregnancy center, once the young woman gets there, she is given an ultrasound that has become kind of standard, but that's an opportunity for her to see that there actually is something growing inside her body. Even before she can feel the child move, the ultrasound picture will show her that there is a little human being in there. So the other area that I wanted to talk about a little bit is media. The people who are abortion-minded, now technology has been developed so that when they do a search for an abortion facility on their phone, we've developed technology to intercept them in their area and redirect them to a pregnancy center. And since the pregnancy centers are now called options counseling, then when they get to the pregnancy center, they're told their options, but they're also given counseling for the to give birth. And then also the pregnancy centers are heading up educational resources to get into the schools. I had mentioned that we want to be preventative with our education, so we're going into schools now with curriculum for younger grades into the churches as well. Getting the churches involved has been problematic. I think I'll just set that topic aside for now because I've been talking quite a bit. I wanted to talk about the areas that you can involve people in, that you can especially pray for those areas because those are the most vibrant and developed areas. In terms of media, I work with a colleague named Jacob Barr is a young man who has developed many videos for educating people. They're interviews with people who are in the field. They're very natural. People will sit down and tell their stories and how they got involved in working with pregnancy centers. And many of those have short teachings for men, and many of them have short teachings for churches. So if anyone hearing this recording is interested in any of the resources that I've mentioned are in English and some are in Spanish, so they can be appropriated anywhere in the world because they're all online. So regarding the legal, the medical, and the business, people who have skills, a pregnancy center to be set up as a charitable organization, it needs to have a board of directors. Usually the people who are recruited to be on boards have skills like they can write a grant. They know how to do that. They have financial background. Maybe they have accounting. They can do the accounting. They can prepare the tax returns. So the board members are usually not the ones that go into the center. Sometimes they're men, sometimes they're lawyers, or nurses are needed too. So there's many opportunities for people to get involved. I would say if you're reaching out to people, the main thing is get them involved in somehow and visit a pregnancy center and get acquainted with the center in their neighborhood, and that will begin to open up opportunities. The Holy Spirit will work with people if they have 15 minutes a day or if they have 15 hours a week. It doesn't matter. The Holy Spirit is just so delighted. The Holy Spirit is so delighted. The Holy Spirit can't wait to multiply resources. I've seen the what I call the multiplication of the loaves and fishes many times in pregnancy centers. When there's a need, the way the multiplication worked when Jesus multiplied food is that we needed to present the loaves and fishes, but then the exact thing that we put out got multiplied. And I've seen that many times in pregnancy centers in such specific ways that it cannot be doubted that the Holy Spirit is very active. And as Christians, we don't need extraordinary gifts. We can go with the seven gifts of the Holy Spirit that were given, that the wisdom, understanding, knowledge, counsel, fear of the Lord, not sure if it hit all seven. Then we have the charismatic gifts, which are heightened, Gifts of grace. Those are wonderful to have, but it's not necessary. It's great to be have you know have be born again and have that deeper level of faith. But there are pregnancy centers that are they claim to be atheist and they claim to be secular because they're trying to reach out to that group. But it doesn't matter because human life is so universal and so basic that and fundamental, that it's just fundamental to the human being. The main reason that most young people leave church in the first place is that if for sexual reasons, they want to be sexually active. They don't know what to do. The girls want to have a boyfriend. The girls really want a relationship. They're not that interested in the physicalness. They want the hand holding and the romance. Whereas the boys are more sexually driven. And so our education explains that to people in a nice way, not in a judgmental way, just tries to explain about the biology. And I learned that the male biology, we always focus on the female anatomy because of the pregnancy, but the male biology is extremely complicated. I had no idea how complex it is. So we can teach women about their own bodies and men about their own bodies. And men are very happy to learn about women's bodies too. They're not turned off by the topic. And men want marriage and they want relationships just as much as the women do, but they've been told they're supposed to be macho men, and they really don't want that. That isn't the way contemporary men are. They really want to be fathers. I once had an opportunity to do prison ministry for a few years, and we found that the men first had to have their own fatherless wounds healed, and then when their own, like, quote, inner child was healed, because most of them came from situations where they could have been aborted. So once they were healed, then they could acknowledge their own children. And we saw the pride swell up in them. And men in prison are living at a very sort of basic masculine state. There's nothing there to, like, kind of soften them. So there you see the raw male energy get softened and healed. And that was pretty wonderful. God is close to the brokenhearted. We know that. In the Beatitudes, the blessings, God is so close to the. That's one of the most rewarding things, is to be able to reach out to the younger generation, even if we can't do it for our own kids. Maybe our own kids have gone their own separate ways, but we can do it for other people's kids.
Let your requests be known by God, for peace will guard your heart forever. Whatever is true. Honor for me. pray for everything. Let your requests be known by God, for peace will guide your hearts forever. Whatever. Again, I say rejoice, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice.